Okay, now I'm going to hold the microphone a little bit close to your face. So don't, it's a big microphone, so don't feel intimidated. That is the only one I could get.
Is it rolling right now?
Yeah, it's all going. I haven't, I'm not going to use any of my questions, so I have to sit here and think. I haven't thought about it yet. All right, we'll go with the first one. Jerry, we'll start on something real mundane. What about your training schedule? What about your feeding schedule? What have you been doing this year?
I started out running dogs about 3-4 days a week, and I tried real early in the season to get down to long runs. So for several months, I haven't been making any runs that were under about 45 miles, and they were all with real. Clara ran a 5-dog team all winter, and Mike Ross ran a 7-dog team, and I ran an 8-dog team. And all the dogs went exactly the same miles the whole time. And they eat the same thing year-round, salmon, boiled salmon and rice, and a little bit of commercial food thrown in.
Jerry, you're from St. Mike's, and I'd like to ask you about, if you could talk a little bit about some of the advantages and disadvantages of living out in the bush, and maybe specifically like out on the coast. You're not around a lot of other mushers, and I know a lot of people see that as a disadvantage. Some people might see it as an advantage. Problems with accessibility to food and things like that, except for you've got the advantage of the salmon and stuff. What do you see as some of the advantages and disadvantages of coming from a place like St. Mike's, as opposed to take the guys in the interior who really seem to have a lot of the advantages?
Well, the people in the interior, and especially the Anchorage, Wasilla, Willow area, have a considerably easier time shipping out their dog food. And that's a big expense for someone who's running Iditarod, especially when I feed my dogs basically off the land. But on Iditarod, I get some extra food, some hamburger and pork and stuff like that. So I have to have it shipped out, buy it in Anchorage, have it shipped out to St. Michael, package it, ship it back to Anchorage, to have it shipped back again to McGrath or Galena or, you know, Clete, like that. So there's quite a bit of expense in there. And my primary sponsor, Chevron, has really helped me a lot with that this year. As far as the advantages go, none of my dogs have ever seen, they never see a good trail like this. Especially going on to Cusco, they don't see any good trails down there, that's for sure. So they really come into, like now I'm training in Fairbanks for a couple of weeks and staying with Rusty, but they really do enjoy it, seeing a real trail with trees. And there's even guys out on the trail dragging tires, and the worst part of the trail here is better than the best trail I've been on all year long. But there's still guys out dragging tires to make it even better. I think that mentally my dogs are very used to running on very poor trails and where it's drifted snow and it's real hard pulling. So I know they're all hard pullers and they're fairly fast dogs. So I view that as an advantage. But a basic disadvantage is that the foot problems that you get on the coast, there's a lot of them with drifted snow and snowballing and stuff like that. And these trails in here, there's hardly any foot problems at all.
How about the problem of you came into Fairbanks a couple weeks early so you could supposedly expose your dogs to maybe some of the sicknesses that go around, diarrhea or whatever. There aren't any other teams in St. Mike's. How is that? I mean, does that have as its advantages and disadvantages?
Well, the advantages are that when everyone cleans their cash houses out, I get all their dog food that's left over, and it's a, you know, it's still a traditional thing in many small coastal villages. A person or a family puts up at least enough food to get through the winter, especially dry fish and other seal and blubber and whale and stuff. And so you put up enough to last you through a real bad winter. So any normal or easy winters, there's leftover food. So I've had just a tremendous amount of help from people in the village that always give me dry fish and leftover food and clean out the freezers and their dried whale meat and blubber and stuff like that. So I'm just real fortunate from that standpoint, being the only dog team there. And since I do divide my dogs up into two or three teams a lot, run really a lot of small teams, they get plenty of chance for all of them to be leaders and all of them to be swing dogs and all of them to be wheel dogs. And what I'm always hurting for is wheel dogs. You know, the wheel dogs have to be real tough. And they never get a chance to be tough on the coast because there's no trees and they don't get banged around like the wheel dogs in the interior do, going around corners. And the wheel dogs and then the team dogs right in front of the wheel dogs are always getting banged around trees and stuff. And my dogs, I have no lack of front-end dogs. I've got lack of rear-end dogs.
Let's talk about the dogs for a minute. Now, this is going to seem like sort of an elementary question, but for those who might not know anything about dogs, could you tell us what your, like, what different mushers I notice seem to have different relationships with their dogs? Some see them really as just their pets and friends. Other people have a more serious relationship with their dogs where they're more, not quite machines, but maybe athletes or something. How would you assess your relationship with your dogs? How do you view them?
I'm pretty far down the line. I'm right down with the dog lovers. I'm not really up there with the dog drivers. And I don't ever go after my dogs. And I don't ever really get down on them. I'll call them up once in a great while just to see what they do. But I pretty firmly believe that the way that most of these middle distance and long distance races are won, it really is by, it's a care of the dogs. And I've seen it time and time again, not just with myself, but basically with some of the people I've traveled with, like Rick Swenson and Susan and Sonny and Joe May and some of these other guys. If I start listing them all, then I'll forget somebody, so I better not list any more. Emmett, well, I couldn't possibly not list Emmett because he's taught Rick Swenson a lot and me a lot. And Carl Huntington's taught me really a lot, too. I really think that the way to win is just caring for your dogs, and a whole bunch of guys can go out and drive their dogs harder than you are doing. And occasionally someone will win that way by pushing their dogs beyond what I would push mine or what Rick or someone. But I'm sure that when they're out there, they're thinking in the back of their heads that there's somebody pretty close behind them that has a capacity to beat them simply because they've either fed them more or fed them more often, or the musher themselves has spent less time sleeping, more time caring for feet and things like that. So I'm pretty much a diehard dog lover when it comes to that.
Do you have a favorite dog, your lead dog by any chance, that is a specialty? And if so, I would like to ask you about your relationship with your lead dog. It's sort of a strange question, but one thing I know that seems to be interest to other people, especially those that don't know anything about dog mushing, is this relationship between either a lead dog or some special dog to the musher. If you've got one of those dogs, could you sort of describe what that's like?
I use a different leader almost every time I go there. They don't all know G and Ha, most of them do, but there's only like three dogs out of 16 I'm going to start with that aren't leaders. So they all, it'd be real hard to single one out. I think that my best command leader, his name is Leo, and he's named after Leo Fitka from Marshall, who I got him from when he was a young dog. And he's the last of the Call of the Wild type dogs, like Buck in Call of the Wild. I mean, he's a real macho dog. And when he starts slowing down on me and starts just training pups, so when I train leaders with him, if the other dog makes any mistakes at all, Leo just nails him. It doesn't matter to him. He's a boy, of course, and all the women mushers would really appreciate Leo. He beats up on women just as much as men. You know, whoever's next to him, if it's a girl or a boy dog, if they do the wrong thing, he nails them. And he's just been a huge asset helping me train an awful lot of leaders. Charlie Fitka and Leo Fitka raised him and trained him when he was really young, and then I got him as a young dog. And he's taken me, Dick Mackey told me one time that he was having a lot of leader problems. This was years ago, and he told me that he'll never go on the Iditarod again unless he's got a leader that'll swim halfway across a lake and then jump through a ring of fire and swim the rest of the way across a lake. And I have only a few dogs that'll do that, but that Leo's certainly one of them.
Jerry, with the fast pace of the Cusco 300 and with the people talking about the 10-day race with the Iditarod, now I don't know if the people, the mushers, are actually talking about that as much as the press. What do you think about the 10-day race? And if you think that it's possible or probable, how do you think the change in the dogs between, you know, coming across the finish line in 14 days and 10 days, I notice a difference just as an observer that they look different. I mean, the mushers look different. They're more worn down. They're they're pushed more. What do you think about the 10-day race?
Well, categorically, I won't go to Nome in 10 days. I can say that almost 99.99% for sure. And I don't know if anyone will, but it is shaping up this year. The weather looks like it could be a pretty cool, reasonably fast trail. But we have to remember, all these record times have been set on these real warm years, and we're all going saying, oh, I wish it would get cold. If it gets cold, like Cowboy Smith says, if it gets cold, I'll show you how to go to Nome in 10 days. Well, none of what we're all concerned about is when it gets warm, the dogs trot slower. And like Ernie and Joe May pretty much have it figured out. You know, it gets warm, they go slower, but you can run them longer, but they go slower. And all of our talking, it may not be true. We may get a real, real good cold deer with a good trail, and they may need that warm weather for stamina, and it may be a 14, 15-day race again. And we also have to consider that as far as Iditarod goes, there certainly hasn't been all that much trail breaking in the last few years. And talking with Rick a number of times, 76 was the last cold Iditarod, where it was basically no warmer than 25 below all the way from Anchorage to Nome, well, or from Finger Lake to Nome, say. And it was cold that year. Joe Reddington, it was like 67 on his thermometer, and it was like 68 on mine out of Ophir. So that was a very cold year. And I don't really see a 10-day Iditarod. I certainly don't see myself doing it. And an awful lot of mushers don't want a 10-day Iditarod. They don't want that. It's still a race, even if it's a 15-day race. It's no less of a race because you're weathered in or something like that. So I would say not to look for a 10-day Iditarod. I think that recent things that have been happening concerning care of dogs and stuff like that may also tend to put a little bug in the ear in some of the very front-running mushers about better care of their dogs and better-looking dogs at the finish line. So it's just a matter of seeing what happens. I think that it is easier on dogs when it's cooler for pulling. They pull better. They don't dehydrate as much. And I think the dogs, what's happening is all the dogs are getting, the breeding programs of the mushers are getting so good that your times are basically getting shorter on Iditarod, not because of guys pushing their dogs beyond what they should be pushed, but by the fact that everybody's got better dogs and how good they go. When you do get it, someday there'll be a 10-day Iditarod, and I'm just hoping that it'll be when a lot of dogs can handle a 10-day Iditarod, and that'll be great, you know, when it comes to that. I don't think it's this year, though.
I'd like to ask another question that may not seem of too much interest, but could you tell us about your equipment? What equipment do you use on the Iditarod? Your equipment and the dogs. Talk a little bit about your sleds and that kinds of things. When you say you're putting together stuff for the Iditarod, what kind of equipment are we talking about, and how extensive?
It's just so standard that I think everybody's got good dogs, and everybody's got good equipment, everybody's got good plans, and the whole race is all luck. It's not really, but I've got a couple three Tim White toboggans. I'll probably only use two. I might use three. I've got runner material from George Ray's shop. I've got it from Roger Rotino. And I've got some from Tim White and from Brian Blanford in Nome. So Tim White toboggans, standard Coleman stove, standard Oscar thermos, a standard sleeping bag, and about half the mushers on the trail are wearing Robin Klupach parkas. And I've had mine for years, and my wife has one, and a lot of people I know have one. Rusty's got one. Everybody I know has one, just about. I don't mean it that way, but she just makes 10 a year, and she's already got a couple of years' worth of orders in advance. Other than that, it's just everything is just standard. I'm feeding the same thing most guys feed on the race, and everybody's getting so equal that it used to be the race was a third luck and a third to musher and a third to dogs, and I think that it's getting down to about half of the race is the musher's condition and the musher's decisions and the condition of the dogs, and I think just about a full half of the race is luck and strategy.
Boy, I've got just a couple more. Down there, I don't know what they're thinking. Now, Jerry, again, this may seem like another stupid question, but every musher you ask sort of gives a hem and haw answer. But why do you run dogs? I mean, what is it about it that first of all got you into it, and second of all keeps you in it?
Well, what got me into it was very simply Carl Huntington and flying along Iditarod and meeting him and getting to know him and his wife Glenda and his dad Sidney, and just getting to know that family. And Carl gave me, just flat out gave me, three dogs that were from his winning team on Rendezvous and the Iditarod that year, and it's that has been the core of my breeding stock, those dogs plus from Emmett Peters and from Charlie Fitka. And I put those together roughly 5, 6, 7 years ago to where I basically have my own breed now, and I try to stay in it pretty closely. And that's what got me into it, and the reason I enjoy it, well, it's, everybody knows it's an awful lot like ranching, and I've always been interested in ranching, and I tried not to miss too many spring and fall roundups, and I really like riding out and, you know, branding cattle and or branding calves and stuff like that. So to me, it's kind of a throwback to Western ranching and stuff like that. And it's, you know, you feed dogs once or twice a day, and you have to care for them, and you have big vet bills just like ranchers do. And so it's kind of like ranching in Western Alaska. I enjoy it, caring for the dogs, and it means just as much to me to see my dogs have a good time out on the trail as it does to, you know, see how they place.
Last question. Being the winner of the Cusco 300 2 years in a row, last year going into the Iditarod, you had some physical problems with yourself. You were a little limping there, but this year, you know, everything seems to be going for you again this year. And how much pressure do you feel going into it yourself? Like, is it something that you're really thinking about, or do you worry about what other people are thinking, or how do you handle that pressure and that stress?
I'd say that this pressure and stress is about as close to zero as you can get. I'm just going to head out down the trail, and basically when you pull the hook, all the Iditarod mushers are really just a bunch of gladiators, and we're just out there making our way to Nome as best we can, and we appreciate all the support that the Iditarod committee gives us along the way, like marking a trail and everything like that, and flying our dog food out. And it's, I just never had problems with dog food being in checkpoints, and it, we're just heading out and going down the way. I don't feel any pressure at all. You know, where I finish is where I finish, and If Rick Swenson wins for the fourth time, then the way I look at it, that's more power to him. And if Susan Butcher wins, or Joe May, or if someone wins 10 times, that means that 10 times we've had the best team. And if somebody that, if a rookie wins, then that's super. And if it's just, it's real easy to look back and say, oh, if I would have done this, if I would have done this, if I wouldn't have done this. And every year I say, well, if my dogs wouldn't have got sick. Well, they'll probably get sick this year, and I'll probably be way back there this year, which is just fine. You know, I enjoy going along the trail and seeing the country and seeing the, it's getting to be where it's really fun to see all the checkers after you go a few times. You know, you only see them once a year, so do a little visiting and see if I'm trying to win. You know, I'm not trying to sound like I'm not trying to win. I'm out there and I'm competitive, and I'm going as fast as my dogs will go. And I've found out, you know, through winning a couple races, that if I win, I win, and if I don't win, I don't win, and there's no sour grapes, that's for sure.
I don't want to forget one last important question. You have two really good sponsors, especially your major sponsor there, Chevron. How helpful has your sponsor been? And I guess I mean more in a general way, like how important is it for you to have a good sponsor in order to really be competitive in the race? Do you think that a guy, for instance, who doesn't have a lot of the help that maybe you have, do you think it's a real big disadvantage for them to overcome? Or and I guess using your own experience, you do have a good sponsor.
It is a disadvantage if you don't have a good sponsor. That it's a twofold advantage having one. Initially, monetarily, you will probably pick better dog food. And if you're thinking about a checkpoint where you're trying to plan it down to 5 pounds, like say you want 60 pounds of dog food somewhere, and you figure, well, it's always stormy that next section of trail, but geez, I don't want to buy 10 pounds more of mutton, you know, or something like that, so I won't do it. Well, if you got a good sponsor, you just go ahead and you get it, which is just super. But what I think more important than that is the fact that when you have a real good sponsor, you know that they're putting their dollars and cents on you. And, you know, a few times when you're kind of thinking about stopping or thinking, well, gee, sure would be nice to spend 2 hours longer in McGrath or Galena, then you figure, well, there's all those people back in that office in Anchorage or wherever the person's sponsor is, like Barrynair and Nome, and you just figure, well, guess I better hit the trail. So I think sponsors in more than one way really help you hit the trail.
Claire, I'm not exactly sure how long. Listening to Jerry, it sounds like he's been into dogs for an awful long time. He's won the Costco 2 times, and he's been entered in the Iditarod several times. What's it like being married to a musher, and like how much of your time goes toward, let's say, the goal of running the dog race?
How much time? Not even half the time, I'd say.
Do you see Jerry running the race more like us running the race, like you train the dogs, I notice, and you go out with the dogs an awful lot and stuff. Do you see it more as not just Jerry running the dogs, but you and Jerry, or is it still pretty much Jerry's show?
This year, it's Jerry and I. Since before we had kids, I have been running them quite a bit this winter.
How stressful does it get in the house there? Does it ever, I don't know if it's the same in your household. It might be easier to run dogs there than it is here in Fairbanks, but a lot of money and a lot of time goes into the dogs and stuff. Do you ever think that it's sort of a crazy way to live?
No, I don't think so.
You're a lot better person than I am, Clara. You really are. How about the girls? Do you think the girls will ever get into mushing when they get older?
Yeah, I think so. And they're always wanting to go for a dog team ride. I think they will be.
What's your favorite part about mushing? What do you like?
My favorite, well, training dogs. I like it.
Do you have any special, like, distance that you like going? Do you like going those 90 miles?
Not really. It's too tiring for me. I like going the 40-mile, 50-mile runs. That's the distance I like. The 90 mile is much too long for me, I think.
How did you feel when Jerry came across the finish line first there in the Cusco 300 for the second time in a row?
Oh, I don't know. I was happy. I mean, I really didn't know what to think about it.
What do you think of, like, coming from a place like St. Mike's into Fairbanks and then to Anchorage and stuff for training and stuff? Do you think it's good for the dogs and good for Jerry and good for yourself?
Yeah, it seems to be. Well, I don't know. This is the first time we've done it, so we're just trying it out to see what it's like. I mean, to, you know, before the races, dogs are always getting sick. We just want to try something different to see if it helps.
Charlene, do you want to say something?
Yeah.